Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. My guest today is Phil Rocco from Marquette University. We're talking about the RNC coming to Milwaukee, and we were previously talking about the number being thrown around of $200 million economic impact being a little dubious.
Well, I mean, the other
potentially,
thing,
but because it was basically based off of a study of the impact in Cleveland post 2016.
Yes,
correct.
That's correct.
But even that, at least when PolitiFact looked into that number, was not entirely, because a lot of the money leaves.
Yes.
As far as it going back to corporate headquarters for hotels that are chains and not owned by people who live in Milwaukee.
Right.
It's Uber drivers who come in who don't necessarily live in Milwaukee. It's security and police who don't necessarily live in Milwaukee who are getting paid. And so a lot of the money that is generating necessarily doesn't stay. And so the big question is, if we're doing this as a city, if we're doing this to get ours.
Yeah.
Is that really going to happen?
Well, the question is, what's ours? Like, what are we looking for, right? And it's the number that Visit Milwaukee throughout, and there wasn't a lot of background. I mean, like, the Common Council was briefed very quickly before the decision ultimately had to be. It was like an exploding offer. So they basically said, we've got $200 million, you know, and then it's like, well, what's that based on? And to their credit, members of Common Council did ask really hard questions, right, about that. But when you dig into it, it's like, okay, we don't get to collect any of that as revenue. A lot of the money that is going to come in is not going to go to local business owners. It's going to leave the city. But then you have to deal with the fact that, okay, yeah, some businesses are going to see a lot of play from that. And that's cool. That's good for them.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but there are costs too. I mean, the city, the security plans, if you looked at them for the DNC, it's a lot of the city is going to be blocked off, which means that a lot of local businesses aren't going to be as accessible as they normally are during the same time. And there are security risks, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the big thing for me, because one of the things I look at in my research is sort of the politics of numbers. Everybody loves to throw out numbers, right?
How we all use them. Statistics?
Well, it's not even, the thing is, I don't even know that it's deliberate lying.
No, I
right?
know. But isn't that a book?
It's just, exactly. Yeah. I think it's just like it's optimism, right? And you have to sell it with one number because that's what can get reported in the media. And that's, you can say that very easily. But in reality, if you think about, like, what do we gain as a city, a lot of that stuff falls apart on closer inspection, which is why I think, you know, the interesting thing, if you look at the framework agreement the council agreed to, they can amend it, right? Right now, it says, you know, that the host committee needs to get a good faith amount of money into the city. I think previously members of Common Council had asked for like $6 million. But, you know, they could go and press for, you know, getting a little bit more, especially if we're not going to be able to collect the revenue. Because in part, I think, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but it's, you know, I think that the best argument you could make in favor of the city getting or going after the RNC is the hope, and I think this is the mayor's hope, is that that's going to open up better bargaining with the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to create a more favorable state-local relationship. And I'll admit, that seems optimistic to me.
Hmm.
I mean, I sort of understand why the mayor is forced into the position of having to, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah.
Right? But it doesn't, you know, it seems to me that this is a power move. Republicans gain from having it in Wisconsin because it's a swing state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the city, the gains maybe our, you know, credibility for its ability to host a big mega event, but there are other mega events it could host. But yeah, it's, I think, you know, that's the challenge, is like, I think that Chevy Johnson's like backed into a corner here. The question is, like, now the bargaining position is not entirely the same. The city is now the only city that the RNC has. And so I think it actually holds a little bit more power to try to wrest a little bit more from the committee, especially if it's not going to be able to collect any revenue.
Which I hadn't even thought about that, as far as, because I remember that as a last minute wrench thrown into the negotiations, as potentially like, we want this much money secured for the city and yada yada. And I hadn't even thought about that as far as being able to amend it. But one thing that's funny, I don't know if this made it into the final agreement, but at one point, one of the asks from the RNC was to be able to ride the hop for free.
Oh my God.
Not knowing that everyone rides the hop for free.
Yes. No, no, no. Just let them think they're writing it for you. Oh, this is great.
Yeah, this is, we'll give you that. Fantastic. We'll give you that. And so that was very funny to me. But I think this also comes back because there's a lot of talk about, like you said, so there has been this tumultuous relationship between Milwaukee and the state legislature.
Yes.
And where that started, when that started, I don't know. Some people think it's because Mayor Barrett or former Mayor Barrett ran against Scott Walker and there was animosity there. I don't know if it's past that, but there's a huge problem, the fact that not even just in Milwaukee, but in Wisconsin in total, the shared revenue model of we all pay it state income taxes, and the fair share of that money coming back to the city is not just Milwaukee, but every city has been strangled. And that they were sitting as a state on this huge surplus from the last 2 years, partially because of the pandemic and everything. And there is a lot of money that we are just squatting on while all of these cities, Milwaukee included, are starving.
Right.
And the parts that actually have to pay for stuff, they have to pay for fire departments, they have to pay for police, they have to pay for roads, they have to pay. And the only other option they have is to continue to raise property taxes.
Right. And which everybody loves, by the way.
I know.
We all love that, don't we, folks?
As someone who just bought a house.
Same. Yeah, we love that.
I would rather pay a little bit more in sales tax. It doesn't hurt as much.
Well, right. And the whole point of having, so like, to give you a sense of like how the magnitude of this, like between the late 90s and now, the like state shared revenue has been cut by like $94 million. So if you're wondering why it's like hard to finance your public parks and stuff, like especially like capital expenses for your like public pool and like upkeep, like that is one reason why the state is making local governments, forcing local governments into a really nasty kind of choice. It's like either you cut the services that everybody needs
or relies on,
and is the reason why people move to your municipality in the first place, or do that thing that everybody loves and raise property taxes. That is a condition caused by the state. And it doesn't just affect Milwaukee, it affects cities across the state and counties across the state too. And if you think about it, like, why do we have shared revenue in the first place? We've had it since 1911. Mm-hmm. We had it because we were the first state to ever create an income tax, progressive income tax, because we used to finance things primarily through the state through property tax. But it was widely agreed that that is a horrible way of financing things. It's often very difficult to administer. It's not very progressive. Often you have people who, you know, are not paying their fair share. And so when we did that, we also created this new revenue sharing program, in part to help, you know, spread the costs and provide some tax relief on property taxes. But in the late 1990s, a couple things changed. One, the share was not adjusted for inflation, and then they actually changed it so it was less redistributive. So between the 70s and early 2000s, it was, you know, if you were in worse shape, you actually got a little bit more of an equalization share, which is pretty cool. Basically, the state was like, we want to help all our communities out and help them succeed and not go to rot. But that was sort of removed. And so now we're in this situation where, you know, you have cities looking for, you know, either having to like cut important services or dealing with like pension fund overruns, or raising property taxes. So it's like a really nasty situation for them. So it's understandable why it's like elected officials at the local level feel backed into a corner, I think, a little bit.
So this is kind of out of, I guess it's not totally out of right field, but so on, I'm trying to think of how this would even work and how cities get into, Wisconsin cities can get into a better situation, especially with the floating proposal out there, Rebecca Clayfish being one of the proponents of it, of just eliminating an income tax in Wisconsin entirely.
Right.
So how do things get paid for? 'Cause, like,
they either don't. That could be number one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you look at the debate stage Sunday night, is a lot of proposals to cut things that I think we know from the history, which is like things don't necessarily go that way. Right. It's pretty hard to cut like vital services. There are a lot of services that states don't get a choice about offering. You simply have to provide them. They're mandates. And that's where a lot of the costs are. So hard to get away with that.
Especially because we don't, it's not like we're Texas and just have a bunch of oil.
Oil money, right. We don't have like a natural resource.
We're not Florida that has, at least
into.
For now, has a bunch of tourist money. Like we have a lot of tourism, but not, we don't have Disney World.
Right. See, the only way that you could do it, if you're going to keep spending the same, is make the state taxes more reliant on property or sales, which is going to be more regressive. It means that, you know, lower and middle income people are going to pay more.
Yeah.
There's really no other way around it unless you're saying you're going to cut a lot of services that people actually like, because saying that you're going to do it by getting rid of waste, fraud, and abuse, that's not that much money. Right. You like that. The scales don't balance there. So, yeah, that's sort of something that's, you know, always been floated. But it's worth thinking about. It's like that just sort of pushes the Overton window in a particular direction so that we're not talking about the fact that local governments are being forced in the situation that they are.
Well, and so what are the options? So, I mean, like we said, the options available for cities to raise their own revenue becomes property taxes, fees.
Yeah, fines and fees. I mean, if you look at places like Ferguson, Missouri, like prior to the Michael Brown incident in, I think, 2014, I mean, like the city of Ferguson was getting a lot of its money from fines and fees, from essentially, you know, imposing fines on people. Hmm. I mean, which was, and there's really great documentary evidence of, like, the police department actually saying, you got to write this many tickets because we need the money. No, it's not like that everywhere, obviously. You know, there's not many options, right? So one of the things that, like, the county executive in Milwaukee has proposed is, but it would require the state to sign off, is allowing the county to impose a small sales tax. That's one thing. There are counties elsewhere, Cuyahoga County, which is where Cleveland is, they actually have a local income tax, which is the same idea, but a little bit more progressive. There's another thing, this is probably not going to happen, but something I've worked on proposing with a colleague of mine. So we've written up our proposal for a federal revenue sharing model so that cities that, you know, are especially cities that are distressed and have limited ability to get shared revenue from the state would have some federal support there. That was actually interestingly proposed for school districts by the Nixon administration, version of that. But, you know, to be realistic, like that's not on the agenda right now in Congress, like for obvious reasons. So like probably something is going to have to happen with the state, but if it doesn't, either we're going to see more fines and fees, higher property taxes, or we're going to cut services, or some combination of all three, which, yeah, not great from the perspective of local elected officials.
Not great in the perspective of trying to get people to stay in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think that that's certainly, you know, if you think about the reasons why people move to a place or stay in a place, certainly jobs, one aspect of it, but also quality of life and the availability of services. That's why people move to cities in the first place, is there's stuff there. There are things there that people want. And so that's sort of the, I think, the big, you know, sort of challenge with this is that at some point, you know, and I think the thing is, a lot of the conversation goes to talking about Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, maybe Dane County as well. But, you know, there are lots of towns
out
there.
It's not just here, yeah.
And you know, if you talk to mayors in small towns in Wisconsin, which you should, they have a lot of interesting, you know, experiences about what it's like to run a small city where people need services. You know, garbage has to be picked up. You know, the parks need to be taken care of. People need EMS, right? And it's, you know, it's not impossible because people find ways of coping and dealing. But at some point, all of those ways of coping with limits on revenue become increasingly absurdist, right? Mm-hmm. You start having to do things that anybody administering something is going to find kind of absurd.
Well, when we come back from break, we're going to do something a little less bleak because Mr. Rocco's not from Wisconsin.
No.
He's from Pennsylvania.
I'm an outsider.
And so we're going to see what he's adopted and what he will hold strong to between Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. When we come back, As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
All right.